I'm Ted Baker in the studios of WEOS and WHWS at the Scandling Center here at Hobart and William Smith. This is the Hobart Football Podcast for Game 11, the ECAC Bowl game at Westminster College in Western Pennsylvania Saturday. We're joined by the head coach of the Statesman, Kevin DeWall. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Before we talk about last week and ahead to this week, first off, congratulations are in order. 8-2, chance for 9-2, 22-8 in your three seasons here. Anytime you're winning 2.5 times as many as you're losing, you're doing all right.
Yeah, thank you. It's we got a great group of guys, awesome support staff and coaches here. So as we talked about back when I first took the position, that you know we were excited on where we're going and building it. And I think we definitely made some strides, and glad we've earned the opportunity to get another one this Saturday.
You're still in season when it's all over. Are you going to look back and think about, boy, if it weren't for this injury or that tough bounce, we might be 10-0 and making a deep run into the big tournament?
Yeah, you know what? Every year we like to sit back and reflect, both good and bad, and really try to digest it all. And you think of some of the past seasons, some of the great successes we've had, and even sometimes we fell maybe just a little bit short. There's always going to be injuries. There's always going to be a couple of those bounces one way or the other. So I think it's the body of work and really just the big picture of how our guys competed and battled this year. I've been really proud of, and you know, I know we got a great opponent coming up on Saturday, so you know, we're going to have a great challenge and test and opportunity for us. But I think that's the thing that resonates the most. And yeah, woulda, shoulda, couldas. You know, a couple bounces go our way, or you know, if we, you know, can avoid a couple injuries, maybe some things are different. But we'll never, you know, never really make excuses on that, because that's happening for everybody in the college football scheme.
Liberty League honors came out this week, offensive and defensive player of the year. We'll start on the offensive side of the ball. Rayshon Boswell, a first team. Tim Denham, player of the year. Kieran Paskowitz at right tackle, first team. Ben Frank, second team.
Yeah, we had a handful of guys that were up in consideration for it. You know, Cade Frucci was a second-team guy as well.
And, oh, sorry, missed him.
Yeah, it's good to see. I mean, I think the toughest challenge was, you know, only putting up one player for the offensive player. I really think it was Co. You know, I think Tim and Rayshon have been such a great complement to one another that I don't think either one of them has the same season without the other. And we talked about it before. I think, you know, if we only had one of them, it would probably be another back that would be stepping in one of their spots. But they could have had significantly more yards with more touches. But I think that's one of the reasons we were successful, especially running the ball, was those two guys being able to complement each other. Different styles, although both explosive, you know, their different styles, you know, causes defenses to have to, you know, figure out how am I tackling number one versus number two and vice versa. But, you know, obviously great recognition and all that. It's humbling because, you know, we get a chance to recommend and nominate our guys, but it's voted on by other coaches. So it's obviously clear respect that we had some guys that, you know, played at a level that the other coaches respected. And I thought our across the board, I mean, you think about, there were some really good offensive players that jumped out. So for Tim to earn that is a great accomplishment. But and Tim was the first to talk about it. You know, as a running back in particular, you need a lot of guys helping for you. So that's everyone that's blocking for him and for Ray, those guys up front. And it was good to see a couple of our old linemen get recognized as well.
And for Tim, two recognitions. He was actually first team as a running back, player of the year, and first team as a returner.
Yeah, and again, it's just kind of like goes back and forth. Having them both back there as returners, you know, you know, can only put up one guy. And you know, Rayshon was, you know, arguably one of the most dynamic athletes, you know, in that position was one that once he was first team as a running back, we kind of just, you know, let that go. But none of those, it was really cool about those guys. And that's why I love not only coaching them right now, but where they can go. Like their upside is through, we haven't come close to their ceiling yet. But they're such team first guys that they don't need those accolades and recognition to, you know, just verify that they've been, you know, great players for us. And I think that's what's really cool is I love coaching great players who hold themselves to that high standard and just want to get better. And I think they're gonna. That's what's good news.
You put them both together and you get Tim Sean Denwell, 2,000 yards, 30 total touchdowns.
That's pretty impressive.
Anybody be happy to have that.
Absolutely.
And then on the defensive side of the ball, Emmett Ford, defensive player of the year again, despite an injury-shortened season, joined by Brian Aguilar in the first team, Isaiah Boone in the middle of that D-line, second team, Jared Leak, first team, Cal Sullivan, second in the secondary.
Yeah, again, I thought our defense was scattered with that group had more of the returning seniors and experience, and from the first whistle to the last, those guys have been the, you know, they're the engine. They're the ones really driving us as a team right now, and you know, I think some of those guys you mentioned have overcome injuries this year, which is really cool to see that, like, their perseverance, that warrior mentality that they have has been really significant and just goes along with that defensive mindset of just the toughness piece. And, you know, Emmett he's a guy that I know just going against him, you have to game plan specifically for him. So he might have had some lower stats than maybe he had the previous year because of missing almost three games with the injury. But even when he was playing, he wasn't playing at full capacity, which is pretty neat to see, like, how he's still playing at a high level when it's not necessarily his 100%, it's his new 100%. And but it was great recognition for him. And I thought, you know, we had a handful of guys that maybe were deserving that didn't earn it. I have a tough time saying that CJ Calero is not an all-conference linebacker. But in a conference where there were some top defenses, again, it's voted on by the other coaches, but in my eyes, CJ Calero is an all-conference linebacker. And we had a couple other guys that maybe were deserving. But, again, we know that it's all about the team success, and those are just great compliments on their body of work for the season. But I think all those guys would give that up just to have a chance right now to have won our conference and play in the NCAA playoffs.
Back on the offensive side of the ball for a moment, I don't know if you've given this any thought. I have, because I have spare time to do stuff like this. Rashawn Boswell at wide receiver when Tim's in the game at running back. You've lined him up as wide receiver a little bit, but is that a possibility maybe for next year?
Yeah, we actually looked at it in the COVID season there when we didn't have the season. We played around with it, and he's arguably our best receiver just in terms of just natural ability to create separation, catching the football, all those things. One of the things that that I go back as a play caller is I can control the touches a little bit easier from him at the running back. Now, he is as dynamic, so I think moving forward, and you saw it more this year than his first year, you know, he's lined up as a slot receiver, he's lined up as a tailback, he's lined up as a quarterback. Obviously, we've done that with Tim as well. I love just great football players. Take away athleticism, take away their positions. We're going to try to recruit those type of young men and just continue to find those pieces of puzzles of where they fit in best with our offense. So I think both of their roles will continue to grow and develop, which I said, like, I think Tim and Ray are having very good seasons, excellent players, but the good news is their hard workers are only going to get better. And when they set that standard, then all the guys around them are going to follow that lead.
And, of course, there's nothing better than having fresh legs in the fourth quarter. I mean, the way you use those guys, they don't get beat up. Rashawn got hurt a little bit, but you reduce that injury risk because you're not giving a guy 27 carries and he's getting all beat up.
It really is. And we've had some years in the past where we maybe had one guy take the lion's share of the carries. And what happens is if there is an injury, or I look at productivity, what's really, really impressive is Rashawn's averaging over 7 yards a carry over the course of the season. And to be able to bring in that type of firepower, Tim has that. But like I said, that's why, and I keep saying this, our 3, 4, and 5 running backs have to be able to go in and contribute. And I know we can as well. So that position is only going to continue to get better as guys gain some experience, another, strength and conditioning program, and then through recruiting. And if we get another situation where we have some impact running backs, that's going to give us the ability to move Rashawn or some other guys around and ultimately just try to get your combination of your best 11 guys on the field on a more regular basis. And again, I think we end up rotating and use a lot more packages than most people. So you're going to see tight ends coming in and out and wide receivers coming in and out, running backs. So I think that is something that I've always appreciated as an offensive coordinator, and we'll always look to while we can still be hopefully efficient and productive with those groupings.
Final week of the regular season, 31-0 win at the U of R. But we were saying afterwards, it was interesting. I mean, that game could have been very different. You got all the fourth down stops. They were moving the ball. They ran it better than anybody's run it against you all year. Is that the way you kind of looked at it? Is that we did a good job, but it was closer than that number, I think, showed.
Absolutely. And I think that, we talked about it last week going in. I almost predicted it. They were a much improved team. They probably benefited more than almost the other teams having that COVID season because they had two recruiting classes to kind of close the gap on. They had some really solid players and some good young guys. So their staff's done a really good job recruiting there. And I think it just shows the parity in our conference. I don't think there's not many bad teams across, Division III anyway. So, but I thought, I think as our defense kind of got banged up a little bit towards the tail end of the season, those last couple of games, some teams were running the ball on us a little bit better. credit to that. The other part was, the bend but don't break defense. They came up with some trustworthy stops when we needed it. And then I think the time of possession was a huge thing. That was one of the few games this year, like the offense. I mean, we scored almost every single possession when we had it early on. We just didn't have it as much. And I think that's something we tried to do to other teams. So they kind of flipped the script on us, kept our offense on the sideline there for at least the first quarter. But I think they're an improved team. And, moving forward, I think that there's never an easy game when you show up in the Liberty League Conference.
Ultimately, defense is about stopping the other team from scoring, and you did that with 6 fourth down stops. I mean, when you had to make plays, one of them inside your own one.
Yeah, and I think that was what I was really pleased with at that point. Things weren't necessarily going our way. We got the first touchdown, and they go and have that drive, and it was good to see that our defense, made that final stand, and then the offense turned around and went on a 99-yard drive. And I think that's closer to the complementary football we've been looking for that past great teams have had where, all right, defense gets a stop, now offense, now let's take that momentum and capitalize, or vice versa. Offense gets a score, defense gets a stop, or a special teams play. And it's just a part of the process. It's the growing and the maturation process that I think we're starting to get, closer to the way that I would hope and we're going to be playing moving forward. And again, when you play really good teams, you're not always going to get shutouts. But if you can get some timely stops, and especially in the score zone, that's significant to come up with those key wins.
You went very run heavy in this game, and it worked well. And it really points out that running backs need a good offensive line. I mean, the holes were there, and I've been impressed with these backs all year at their ability to read the hole, change the hole if the first call isn't there, and then cutbacks afterwards. I mean, the Denham Wildcat touchdown run, I mean, he changed direction about 4 times.
Yeah, and I thought when we graded out the film, the first half in particular was the best half that we've played from an offensive line tight end standpoint of just truly covering up the right guys. We didn't have many missed assignments. And if we do that, then usually the running backs are going to make that second level or third level defender miss. And they did that. I mean, at halftime, we were averaging 12 yards a carry. So, yeah, I wasn't calling many passes because I said that to the receivers and quarterbacks. It has nothing to do with what they were doing. Rochester was playing solid on defense, but they didn't want to commit the extra guy down in the box. And, as a play caller, I mean, if it's work, I'm going to keep going with it. And like I said, unfortunately, we turned it over on the first possession, which was, I think our first lost fumble from a running back position this year. So they've taken really good care of the football, but we were driving really well on that one. That kind of stopped us. But then the next couple drives, and again, then Tim was really playing at a high level. And I think had we kept him in, he only got, I think, 1 carry in the second half. Had we kept him in, he could have had a really even a bigger day. But that being said, I thought Rayshon had a really solid day. Even though he didn't find the end zone, which was rare for him, he still was productive and had a really good day there. So I thought it was a really good opportunity for the offensive line and tight ends to kind of get some momentum as we were going to hopefully at that point earn an opportunity here in the postseason. And again, just trying to get the ball in our best players' hands, I thought that that's what we were trying to do in that first half. And then the second half, when we tried to throw it a little bit more, we had a couple drops, we had a couple missed opportunities, and that's the thing right now. There's more things that are going wrong when we've been throwing the ball than when we were establishing that line of scrimmage in the run game.
I love watching smart players in any sport, and right before the end of the half, Cal Sullivan read that play. You could see he knew almost immediately where they were going with that throwback. He anticipated it, jumped the pattern, and instead of them going in late in the half, you score in the last play.
Yeah, it was interesting because I used the timeout thinking that we were going to try to stop them originally. But again, they drove on our defense. That's the thing, that, like you said, to hold them to a shutout when they had the way they had some big plays. They were down in the score zone, to get the stop on the one play and then going right there late in the game in the score zone. We had a really good pressure by Emmett Ford that forced the quarterback to maybe throw it a step sooner or maybe a little bit more errant than he had wanted. And, there's a senior making a play on the front end, and then obviously a senior on the back end, Cal Sullivan, great anticipation, jumping it. And then just the way the play was set up, the team was running one way, they throw back, he had the open sideline, and we joked around afterwards, he got caught in that one. He probably wasn't going to hear the end of it. But really big momentum switch. Like you said, it was 21-0 at that point, could have got it to a two-possession game, and instead now we go up 28-0, literally right before halftime. And even though the second half there wasn't as much scoring, I thought that was a really significant play in the game.
So now take us through the process of how the bowl bid is done, because we talked last time there was no more Liberty League versus E8 second place. This involved, my understanding is, there were five conferences. Is there just the one game, or was there more than one bowl game? And how does it end up you're at Westminster?
Yeah, it's really changed over the last probably decade to 12, 15 years, where, you know, before, if you didn't make the NCAA playoffs and if you were in the Northeast, it was really much just the ECAC game was your opportunity. And over the years, because we were making so many NCAA playoffs, we've really only played last time we played an ECAC game, to my recollection, is 2003 when we beat Norwich at home. We were 1-0 in the ECAC games. And that was my first year as a coordinator, you know, many years ago. Fortunately, we had made the NCAA playoffs for so many years that, like, that's the route we were going. A couple of years ago, they created that New York Bowl, which was basically the team that the next highest seed that wasn't going to the NCAA playoffs from the Liberty League and the Empire Eight. And that's when we were able to play 2019. We beat Cortland at Cortland, which was a really big win for us.
By the way, the last game they've lost.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah,
unbeaten this year.
Yeah, and it was just that was a really momentum builder. And who knew that we were going to have that whole COVID year and all that? It just seemed like so long ago. But that was really good momentum going in. And, you know, obviously we want to win every time we take the field, but we're really process-driven in our approach. And to us, one of our goals is always going to be to play as long as we can, as far as we can. Obviously, we want to compete for a national title, you know, and we're building to get towards that point. And unfortunately, just the way some things played out this year, the NCAA playoffs weren't in our cards. But when we had an opportunity to put in for the ECAC game, you know, I thought our body of work and just looking at our records and who we played, I thought was going to give us a really good opportunity to be considered and then invited in those. Some conferences have some alignment. So, like, some of the, you know, New England schools or Pennsylvania schools, they still have a game similar to, like, what the New York Bowl was. With us not doing that, then there was probably about 15 schools or so that put in for an ECAC invite, and they can choose between two, three, or four games. And the way they did it this year, which is a little different than the past, they basically picked the top two teams and made that the marquee game. And fortunately, we were kind of chosen to go down and play Westminster, who was the top seed. We were considered the second. Would have been great to have the home game. I think we were hoping for that for a lot of reasons, you know, for give our seniors and our fans and recruits one more time to see us on Boswell Field. But that being said, I think this is going to provide our guys. This is like a first-round NCAA playoff game. They're co-champs, and they won their conference in the spring. They had a five-game season there and, you know, lost to Mountain Union week one, obviously a really good opponent. And then, you know, close games throughout the year. They've beaten some really good teams, and then Carnegie Mellon won the conference, so they're going on to the NCAA playoffs. But this is a very talented team, and then I told our guys, like, as much as we would love to play on Boswell Field, this is going to play out like a first-round travel game. So, you know, you got a 58-man roster and just a lot of logistics that are different than the regular season. So, by all means, this is going to be a really exciting opportunity for us.
So let's talk about scouting a team you haven't seen. First thing is, what is the film exchange? Do you get just the most recent game, or is there more than one?
It's usually agreed upon the last three games. So that's what we did. We exchanged the last three, you know, no common opponents. So it's, you know, for the most part, it's going to be just what they're going to see us in the last three games. We're going to see them in the last three games. They had three very convincing wins there. So, I mean, they were never in even a close game in any of those. One of the games, the most recent one, they played at Geneva College, who runs the triple option. So it might help from a personnel standpoint, but it doesn't necessarily help the scheme standpoint. So, but yep, we exchanged the video once we found out on Monday afternoon. We exchanged the video and went to work Monday night. So we were a little bit behind, because usually we're starting all that Saturday night and Sundays, you know, when you know your next opponent. But yeah, so we did the video exchange, and it's clear when you pop in the video, they're a talented team. There's a reason why they've been co-champs and been really successful programs since Coach Benzel's taken over.
So video can only show you so much. Do you have coaching friends that you can call up that maybe can give you a little extra insight?
Yeah, I mean, they play mostly in the PAC conference, so they really don't play outside their conference. So this is interesting, and one of the things, like, instead of drawing an Empire 8 school or maybe someone that we see, we don't really cross them, you know, and they're down you know, a little bit north of Pittsburgh, down in western Pennsylvania. So they get a handful of guys that are, you know, Pennsylvania guys, Ohio guys. We recruit a little bit against them, but we don't really cross them. You know, I think we're a different, you know, academic-minded blueprint in terms of some of the student athletes that would look at Hobart. I don't think that we're always looking at the same type of students. they've really drawn a lot. Actually, where I've crossed them the most is down in Florida. You know, they pull a lot from Florida and Georgia and some, you know, non-traditional areas. And I just think that they've done a really good job assembling a talented team. They're going to be the fastest team we're going to play. I can tell. I can speak for their defense in particular. They have team speed galore. And then, you know, they've gotten some key transfers from Division One, some Division Two schools that are scattered in. And you know, their defensive end was the conference player of the year. They have the rookie of the year as their corner. When the head coach is the defensive coach, he's going to make sure that their defense is stocked and loaded, and they are. And then on offense, they have some really good speed at their skill positions. They're big up front, quarterback with some experience who's dynamic. So you don't win eight games in that conference and be co-champs by accident. They're from top down, special teams included, they're a really strong team.
That part of Western Pennsylvania, they're not far from Youngstown, Ohio. I mean, that Western Pennsylvania, Ohio area is kind of the cradle of football in America, and it's known, you know, I think like Mike Ditka's from that area. It's known for tough guy, blue-collar football, and I'm hearing that that's what this kind of team is, that they're going to really grind at you.
Yeah, they are, and I look at it like one of their – they have a transfer from Youngstown State. They have a couple transfers from Robert Morris, you know, all the right in that area. And I when I was younger as a coach, I recruited that area, Western Pennsylvania, the greater Pittsburgh, the Northeast Ohio. And there is just great football. The football coaches are I mean, there's a reason why those programs in those areas, they have fertile ground recruiting right in their backyard. And I think that's one of the things that's always helped. You usually find some of those teams are usually going to have a very deep roster and usually the blue-collar tough kids.
It looks like on paper you're going to try to win the game on the ground. They're going to try to win it through the air. Is that kind of how you see it?
Well, it's interesting. Their defense is really, really good at stopping the run. They're going to pressure. They have very athletic. I mean, you look at their front, it's senior, and then they go senior, junior, senior. So, like, they're very strong in the front. They have their leading tackler is a young man from Georgia. He's a great dynamic safety linebacker. And then their younger corners are, you know, two starting corners from Florida that can just flat out cover and run. On defense, you know, I think we're going to have to find a way to stop their pass. They have a couple very dynamic players. At the same time, as you look those last couple games, we got to do a little bit better job against the run just so that, you know, we can maybe build up a little bit more on the pass. So, as always, we want to go in, try to stop the run and establish the run. But they know, you know, especially with Tim and Rayshon and our offensive line, they're going to try to do their best to stop the run. And that's their strength is stopping the run. So I don't think it's like an all or nothing. I think we got to be as balanced. And I said that to our offense. I mean, the way the Rochester game played out isn't the way this game's going to play out. Yes, we're going to be able to try to establish the run, but we're going to have to, and I didn't call a lot of passes because of the way we were went in the line of scrimmage. This game, I envision being a more balanced approach.
As I look at their wide receiver numbers, their top guys are all 14, 15, 16 yards a catch. Are they a deep throwing team, or is that run after the catch?
Both. Their top receiver is not very big, but he's lightning in a bottle. He can beat you over the top, and they've had numerous shot down plays. But also, if you play too soft, they catch it, and they got the wiggle underneath to then create the run after the catch. So, yeah, they do a really good job in their offense. They do a lot, you know, in game to game, the game plan changes. So that shows both a veteran offense that has the ability to then adapt game to game. So, like, they'll have a unique game plan for our defense for sure.
This has every indication of being a close game. Rob DiGregorio, honorable mention in the All-League honors, and he's kicked well this year, and you've seen and Toby Weffring can come out and try that longer field goal. Both those guys have hit from 43 this year, so that's something you got in your pocket if it's a tie game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, we actually, it's funny, yesterday in practice, that's what we kind of talked about, is like, you know, it could come down to a kick. It could, you know, when you play a talented team, and again, I don't think either of us know each other in depth like we do. Like during the season, we get 8, 9, 10 looks on a team by the end of the season, or the teams you played in the beginning of the season you've seen over the years. You know, I think the video is going to show something, but I think it's going to be game preparation and then probably more in-game adjustments in this game than ever before, because you just don't know. Like, I know on our side of the ball, what they did the last couple weeks, they defended spread teams or triple option. We're going to see a slightly different game plan or a completely different game plan. And I think the same thing from our defensive perspective. Like, as an offense, we think that they're going to come in maybe doing some things, but they're going to throw some different things at us. This is really, and I said this to our guys before I even know who our opponent was, I said, this is going to play out like a playoff game where you don't know each other well, but this is like a final exam. you almost got to be cumulative in terms of knowing what you've been taught all year long, the standard and everything that we've coached these guys up for. And again, there's been really good plays, but there's plays we've had to correct and clean up that maybe we have made some progress on, maybe they haven't. But when you get to this final exam type situation, it really just goes back to trust your learning, trust your all the coaching points we've had, but go play fast, play physical, the things that we've tried to put our hat on. And I think that's what's going to be really neat to see is that's why I say it's really an exciting opportunity. We drew a very competitive team on the road at their place. They don't lose at home. There's a lot of things that now kick the favor and the advantage to them. And I think that's exactly what we're looking for, is that go in as a hungry team where maybe we're not the favorite, and now let's go see what we can do.
And like you said, right in, you know, ground zero of football in America, I imagine it's a tough atmosphere. They probably draw well, and it's going to be a real playoff feeling about this game.
Absolutely. I think this is going to have a more of a playoff feeling than maybe some of the actual first-round playoff games.
All right, Coach, good luck. We'll do one more. We'll do this next week and with a wrap-up of the season, hopefully a second 9-2 year. Best of luck.
Awesome. Thanks.
This is our Hobart Football Podcast with the head coach of the Statesman, Kevin DeWall. You can, of course, follow Hobart Football on Instagram, @HobartFootball. Also on Twitter, @HobartFootball. The official website of HWS Athletics is hwsathletics.com. So we'll see you Saturday in Western Pennsylvania. Until then, have a great football day.